welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. We're recording a little bit ahead of schedule here. My house is about a block over from the current evacuation zone.
Yep.
With the Davis fire. So if you can't tell, I caught a cold last weekend, and then I've been huffing the smoke from that. I'm going to try not to laugh too much because I'll start coughing.
Huffing sagebrush and pine tree burning.
Oh, it's amazing. Smoke. It's amazing. And, you know, 1960s homes, they're not exactly airtight. So my house smells like it, too. It's awesome.
Oh.
On that note, Dave and I wanted to do a quick little bit of housekeeping. Let's do some fire safety awareness stuff.
Yeah.
In light of what's going on.
Yeah, kind of sets itself here.
Despite the current rumor swirling around, nobody knows how it started yet. Well, maybe somebody does, but they haven't released it yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they stated that it's still under investigation. They think it started at the Davis Creek camping area, the Davis Creek Park.
Yeah, that's what some of the early videos of people kind of leaving the campground, the fire was going. I would guess it was probably a campfire that wasn't put out. Yeah. Embers blew around, something like that.
Yeah, something like that, because it was kind of a breezy, windy afternoon.
Perfect conditions.
Perfect conditions for that stuff to happen, yeah.
Or as I got to make fun of the government for a little bit here. Did you see the press conference this morning?
No, I didn't.
So they have an acronym for it.
Already?
It was a particularly dangerous situation, a PDS.
Oh, God.
Why you can't
just say it.
A particularly, hey, it was extremely dangerous, or maybe that's the next level as an EDS.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess they're trying to get in with all of the social media stuff. Everything's...
Yeah, gotta have an acronym. It was just perfect storm of conditions. Fire broke out, but Dave and I wanted to just, man, I know this horse is dead. If you have a fire going, especially in the summer around here, make sure the thing's completely out.
Yeah, because I know a lot of us that go out and hunt and scout, and you know, in the evenings it's nice out. We have our little
100%.
We have our little fire pit. We have those, what are those little things that you have?
Solo stove.
The solo stove, or me, I'm super old school. I have an old washing machine drum, which
I think it works great.
It's worked for 20 some odd years. It's had lots of burns in it. You know, you have those out there hanging out with everybody. We're preaching to the choir. I'm sure everyone out there that listens is pretty darn solid about this, but just make sure. Piss on it. Who cares? Just get it out.
Yes.
Completely get it out.
I noticed walking into your adventure trailer,
You
got a fire extinguisher right
there.
Yes,
I do.
So this is, we may be preaching to the choir, but this is something I've noticed of all the people, like going out hunting, camping, et cetera, you'd be shocked at how many people don't have a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, I've got one in the trailer and I've got one on the UTV.
Side by side,
Side by side. When you're up there on the antelope hunt, some of that grass was super tall and... you just can't park on the road, on the access roads. So you got to pull off. And there were a couple spots there. I'm like, dude, I'm a little puckered here because
I don't want to be the guy responsible.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, just I guess just common awareness would be go a long way, because like both Henry and I live out in that area. And the last few days have been pretty crazy.
Oh, it sucks, man. Telling my kids, like, and look, I'm not. My neighborhood ain't going to burn. There's no way. Well, I shouldn't say that.
But be careful.
I mean, the odds of my house burning down are like slim to none.
Yeah, because you have a golf course and you got some
all kinds of stuff right there with water.
You. For me, I have an open field, a ditch, maybe two ranches, and then there's where I'm at.
So you're a little higher risk at Dave's place, but
if the wind changes,
it sucks having to sit there with your kids like, hey, everybody pack up your overnight bags.
Right.
And it's not so much out of my concern. It's a simple fact that, hey, if they move that evacuation line one street over.
Oh, yeah, you're done.
That means I got to go.
Yeah.
And it's that headache of like, oh, no. Hey, look, kids, know your Barbie collection is not going to melt. Like, everything will still be here, but still, you got to go through all that stuff. So, look, the point of the sermon, what do we spend on hunting stuff? Thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't tell my wife.
Yeah, mine either. Yeah. But go to Walmart, get a $25 fire extinguisher. It's great insurance. It really just is. Do it.
Yeah. And then also, you know, with everything that's going on out there, I've noticed a lot of real dumbasses on the road.
Oh,
for some godforsaken reason, they feel that whatever they're doing's more important than anyone else's, and they're just absolute just jerks on the road. Just understand the situation. I mean, the firemen and the women and the officers and all the people,
NDOT
folks and stuff, they don't want to be out there having to deal with this either. They're just doing the best they can to keep our community safe. So, you know, no reason to honk at them or yell at them because you can't go up a street that's now closed because there's a visible fire.
Right.
You know, so again, we're preaching to the choir. I guess we're just soapboxing right now from our experience over the last few days.
Yeah, yeah. It hasn't been fun. But on a fun note, Dave, do you want to go into two moose tags in the state?
Let's do that one.
Two filled.
Yes. Let's talk about the first two moose tags ever handed out in the state of Nevada. Both of them have now been filled.
Yep.
And I'll tell you, I'm really, really impressed.
I'm glad.
I did not think we had that size of moose in the state of Nevada. The ones that I've witnessed were not like those.
No.
I mean,
I'll be 100% honest. When those tags came out, I thought I would be seeing pictures of a spindly horned. I did not expect to see, like you said, big, big moose taken. Yeah,
really nice. Both of them are exceptionally nice.
Dark coats. Yeah,
I know the first one from Craig Santos was larger.
Oh, it was giant.
Was larger than the young kid Luke Bryant's, but not to shake a stick at either one of them.
No.
I would have whacked both of them.
You immediately went to, names. I guess we can, now that the tags are over with, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
Tried to get Luke on the show. Supposedly a great kid. He's in an archery group that a friend of ours is the coach for.
Yes.
And so we had kind of an inside connection there. Tried to get him on the show. Apparently, it was overwhelming, the amount of outreach for the family. So this goes back to when tags came out.
Yeah.
Our friend called me and he said, hey, look, man, it's overwhelming. They're getting phone calls, offers from bow companies, you name it. Right now, they just want to lay low and enjoy the hunt.
Yeah.
And there's the one side of my brain that's business, Henry. And I went, man, come on. How often does this happen? And I actually have a connection here. You know, it's that thing. And then there's the dad side of my brain and the normal human being side that I went, you know, if this were my kid, I wouldn't want him going on a radio show either.
Yeah,
I'd want to keep their name out.
Yeah, and but now that it's out and everything, it's in a few publications about congratulating the two two hunters. They were both shot with a rifle.
Yep.
So next year when I receive the tag, I will shoot the first moose with a bow. Just a little FYI, everybody. But maybe we can reach out to them and see if either one of them would like to
come on the show. I'd love to hear about the hunt.
Like, how did they scout it? Was it traditional scouting or was it different? I mean, they both had guides.
Right.
So, I mean, how did that approach go? But yeah, we'll see how it goes. But I'm like floored. I mean, both of those
moose, big moose,
just awesome, awesome moose.
If people listening, if you haven't seen the pictures yet, I believe it's Double H Outfitters was the Craig Santos crew.
Yes. Double H was Craig Santos. And then
Deadline or something.
Yeah. Deadline Outfitters was Luke Bryant's, the young kids.
And I will say kudos to Double H Outfitters with the Craig Santos stuff. They actually published a full, it was a 323-yard shot.
Yeah.
I think it was a 300 Win Mag.
Right, right.
One shot. So they published a little more information. I don't know anything about the Luke's hunt.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything from Luke's hunt in regards to details like that.
Right.
All I've seen is a picture of him with the moose, with his rifle, and the outfitter's logo on the picture. Doesn't say anything about time in the field, distance of shot, you know, all that kind of stuff.
But right.
That may come out.
Let's go ahead and take a break. First, kudos to Craig Santos and Luke Bryant for killing the first two moose.
Yeah.
I should say first two moose legally in the state of Nevada.
Yeah.
I'm sure at some point in history, somebody whacked a moose and thought it was an elk, but
true.
Legal tagged moose.
Yeah, congrats. Now we have a number one and number two record to break now.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, Santos has the number one moose in the state of Nevada.
Very cool. Well, let's go to break. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. The show is Nevada Backcountry, and you are listening to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. We just wrapped up the initial little bit of housekeeping on fire stuff. Congrats to the moose tag hunters that filled those tags.
Yeah.
We're going to sidebar here for a second, then we'll go into bullets, and I've got a moose hunt coming up in November. So we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. First, though, the waterfowl stuff. You've been getting some reports, Dave?
I've been out and about, and, you know, the waterfowl since what the we had the drought of 2019, 2020 through 2023.
Yes.
Really had some really bad conditions. And then we had that fantastic winter of 23, which filled the reservoirs and started getting things back looking better.
Right.
So, you know, these last surveys showed about a 5% increase in breeding duck populations, which is pretty good
for, is it,
for,
okay.
20, for 2023. I mean, any kind of increase is nice to see. It's about a, you know, like an 8% increase in like mallards, almost a 55% increase in widgeons.
Whoa. So, and pintails. Very cool.
Yeah, pintails about 11%. And these are the breeding birds that are
right.
that are in the area. So this is all good stuff to see throughout the survey periods. Habitat conditions are looking okay. There's some still bodies of water that are really struggling. Some of the stuff out in Carson Lake and Mason
yeah.
Valley, you know, due to all of that snowpack we had in 23. And then we had all that flooding that went on and destroyed dikes and just waterways. And so a lot of that's still in the repair phase.
Okay.
So a lot of those bodies of water are still fairly dry.
On that note, I never realized how much effort and know-how goes into managing water at some of these places until I started to go out to Canvasback with a friend of mine. They have a full-time caretaker out there that manages. I mean, that's his job, is make sure certain areas of the club have water at certain times of the year. I'm kind of like, oh, it's a good winter. We're going to have water. But what you don't realize is if you're not managing it, as in the case with Mason, where the flooding destroyed a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and same with Carson Lake as
Carson
well.
Carson Lake. If you're not managing and keeping that water and moving it around strategically, it's gone in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah, the evaporation rate, especially with the temps sitting steadily in the 90s, and we had 14 days of 100 degrees. I mean, that evaporation rates skyrocket. So, yeah, so that all plays a part in it. And, you know, as things are getting fixed and improved upon, you know, water's now being brought to certain parts of these bodies of water. I mean, Stillwater's still probably the state's best waterfowl hunting in
the state. Oh, hands down. Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And they're struggling with water as well still.
Yes.
You know, because there's a lot with moving water around, because there's certain allocation. The agricultural community, the farmers and ranchers have water rights, and then the Department of Wildlife has water rights, and the wildlife refuges have water rights. There's a lot of moving parts there and a lot of moving water. So
they did that big Ducks Unlimited improvement project out there at Stillwater. That's finished now, correct?
Yes.
I'm assuming that's helping the situation out there?
Yeah, that helped. That's helping the situation. And that's probably why it's going to be probably a halfway decent hunting season out there at Stillwater,
because
a lot of the work they have done, a lot of the improvement work that's been done out there.
Gotcha.
You know, due to all of these, the drought and stuff that's gone on. You know, the one cool thing is if any of you are swan hunters out there, the 24-25 season, they're going to increase the swan tags to 750.
You ever seen a swan hit the water when it's shot?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The one year I did not buy a swan tag, hunting out in Mason Valley a bunch when I was out there, I hadn't seen a swan in like 2 years. I'm like, man, forget it. I'm not buying a tag.
Yeah.
And the second day out hunting, I had three swans land in front of me, and one of them was just tricked out with jewelry.
Oh, and there you were, tagless.
Had bands on both legs. Had a
collar on him.
Wing tag.
Oh man!
And they just came right into me, and I was like, oh.
So I was shocked. I've shot some big geese, and when you shoot them high, you know, and they drop like a rock, like they make a big splash.
Oh yeah.
The first swan I ever saw shot, when it hit the water, it was like somebody dropped one of those 60-pound bags of concrete from about 50 feet up. It was like a fat person doing a cannonball into the lake. I was shocked.
Yeah. It is a thud.
They are a big bird.
Oh, yeah. They're awesome, though. But, yeah, so the outlook for the 24-25 season is, I'd say, I put it in the range of it's going to be an average year.
Okay, so yes, it's up, but historically just average.
It's probably going to be still pretty average, with a lot of the area having issues with just keeping water because of pairs a lot of the work that's being done. You know, people still get out there and hunt Washoe Lake periodically, and the last few years have been really questionable out
bad.
There.
Just bad.
But habitat's starting to look good with the increased water we've had, the good winter we've had, and is starting to improve. So,
good.
I mean, so that's a good thing. And I have a feeling once all of these repairs are made, and now that Department of Wildlife runs the Carson Lakes, has that as a new management area, that there's going to be a lot of resources put into that for not just waterfowl, but also shorebirds and other wildlife that that'll be utilizing that piece of that chunk of land.
I'm going to put you on the spot real quick. You brought up Washoe Lake.
Yeah.
Why did they ever go to the 7 days a week thing?
I don't know.
Because remember when it used to be like
that script section?
It used to be Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday or something. It was like
you could only hunt it Wednesdays.
Right.
And Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday.
And you used to always be able to scratch out a bird or two. Seemed like the birds stuck around longer.
Right.
It was never in like the same category as like canvasback or stillwater, but you used to be able to see birds and usually shoot birds down there. Ever since they changed that to that seven, and now you can go on a Tuesday at 2 o'clock if you want. You're lucky if you see a bird, let alone get a shot at something.
Yeah. I don't know why. I mean, why they made that regulation change. I could only assume that maybe that not even really sure.
Just
I was thinking maybe opportunity because there were birds out there every day. So why limit it just to Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday to give people more chances to harvest? But if they're out there every day, you're going to be pushing the birds off.
They're not out there every day
Mason
now.
Mason Valley there was Wednesdays and then the weekends.
Right.
You couldn't go out there every day.
Is that 7 days a week now?
So you get a chance for the birds to settle down and relax and allow new birds to come in and stuff. So, but Mason Valley right now, most of that place is dried up due to this. There's some water in Cinnamon and Redhead and Canvasback, Upper Pintail, some in North Pond. So there's a few of the ponds have water in them, nothing full.
Well, I'll go on record then. I'll say just right off the bat, that was a screw up by allowing 7 days of full access to Washoe. I'm in that camp where I'd rather have one day of decent hunting with my kids where, maybe I only go home with 2-3 birds, but I got 2 or 3 birds.
Yeah, you got to see something.
I got to see something versus now I think that was a screw up. I don't think they hold like they used to there. Anyway, that's my gripe.
Yeah, it's a tough chunk. It's a really tough chunk of land right to even hunt.
What else on the waterfowl thing?
That's all I got right now. I'm hoping to see a report eventually. I mean, hope we'll see a waterfowl report. Yep.
On that note, let's go to break. Thank you to Battleborn Tree Service, for hunters by hunters, for sponsoring the show. When we come back, let's get into bullets, calibers, bullet design, and just selfishly, I want to talk about my upcoming moose hunt.
Yes, and all the rage on that 22
arc.
Yeah.
Hey, don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you're looking for a lightweight hunting rifle option this year, go check out the Howa Superlight and the Howa Superlight. I've made up a bunch of names now, but plus the 4.3-pound version from Legacy Sports International. And thank you to Legacy Sports International for sponsoring Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Waterfowl stuff we've covered. We covered the moose hunt, Dave.
Yeah.
I want to get into something, a trend I'm seeing, I'll call it. And it's been going on for a while, but this push for hunting with lighter and lighter and lighter calibers. Like most everything, I've got an opinion on it. But the one that kind of brought this up was the new 22 ARC advanced rifle cartridge. I've seen a couple videos now of guys killing bears with this 22 ARC. I don't know that I'm a huge fan of the super light, faster, flatter caliber push.
So a 22 ARC, does the bullet look like, you know, like a 22 long rifle bullet, or is it, I mean, when
no.
you say 22, that's what I think of, is like the bucket of bullets you can
yeah,
buy
no,
at
no,
the
no,
store.
No. Yeah, this is not like a 22 long rifle. This would be more in line with like a 22 250 bullet.
Oh, okay. It's
what it is, I guess we can go into a little bit of bullet design, but everybody now is chasing higher ballistic coefficients, higher sectional density, and what those are. So like a ballistic coefficient, the higher the number, the less the bullet's going to drop and the less it's going to be impacted by wind. It okay. essentially is a more aerodynamic bullet. So when you see these numbers, and without going way into the weeds, there's like a G1 BC, there's a G7 BC. It's at certain velocities that ballistic coefficient is going to change. So everybody right now is chasing super high ballistic coefficients because, hey, now you only drop 10 inches at 600 yards versus 17 with these old style bullets.
Oh, okay.
You All know, right. in a crosswind, you're only going to drift 2.8 inches versus 6 or whatever. So that's why bullet manufacturers are chasing this stuff. And it's kind of driven by that competition industry. So people shooting these like the precision rifle championship stuff.
Yeah.
That's where all this is coming from.
And that's why that 6.5
PRC.
PRC yep. gotten so popular. And then like that 6.5 Grendel I have, I mean, that bullet is tiny.
Yes. Yeah.
Itty bitty thing. When I
it's
bought
still
those,
a 6.5
like,
millimeter bullet.
Yeah.
But yeah. it's, yeah, it's just, small.
It's small.
When you're used to looking at like a 300 Win Mag with a 200
right, yeah.
grain bullet.
Yeah. When I'm loading the 308, I'm like, oh, that's the bullet.
Yes.
But yep. so I guess, I don't know if I'm interrupting your
No,
your,
don't.
Your
yeah,
rant,
go.
But I was
yeah.
curious, like, I mean, hunting with, say, the 22
ARC,
yep. is that ethical? I mean, when you're putting such a small bullet through an animal?
Yes and
how
no.
How ethical is it? I mean, how, you know, is it doing the same kind of damage as a 300 Win?
No, and here's my argument against all this stuff, right? The whole purpose of like a 22 ARC is so you can go out and you can shoot more accurately at like 800 yards. It's not a realistic hunting distance.
Right.
You're not going to have, I would not ethically take a shot at that distance on an animal with a 22, talking about like a 78, 75 grain bullet.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. So I would say on the ethical side, absolutely, it's ethical. I mean, plenty of deer have died to a 22 250, et cetera. Yeah. But you're talking about limiting your range. So now an ethical shot with like a 22 ARC, I'd say, okay, 150, 200 yards. There's an ethical shot. Well, that defeats the purpose of having
a 22 ARC.
A 22 ARC, right? So that's my whole thing with this is like some of these videos I've seen, you know, big bear down 670 yards with the 22 ARC. Can you do it? Oh, 100% you can. If it's, you know, perfect conditions, perfect broadside shot, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But these people that are getting into this, and even I'll go like the 6 ARC or like a 243, right? That's a super famous starter rifle for
deer. Oh, yeah. My kids, both of them shot animals with the 243.
Totally ethical, within a yeah. couple hundred yards, yeah, 300, 350.
Yeah, they both shot within 150 yards on the deer.
There you go.
So,
but then going to the 6 ARC for the, you know, or 6 Creedmoor for like these long range shots, it's like, okay, well, that's great. You can do that on steel. But again, you're still looking at like a 300 yard ethical shot with it. So why not just get a 243? It doesn't make a ton of sense to me. To transition from the ethics argument, I've put it out on the show before. I screwed up a long shot on a bull elk in Montana one year, just bad wind call and hit it too far back. That was with a 300 wind mag. That elk still got away. Even after 2 days of looking for the thing, it was gone. And I mean, its back leg was flopping. So shot placement is king. That's what people that use these calibers argue, is that because they're so low recoiling, they're more accurate. And that's great. But again, you know, if that elbow is slightly angled back and that shoulder blade is kind of rotated, now you're talking about making an impact on bone if it's not a perfect, windless, 100-yard broadside shot. So that's why I'm not in favor of some of these super light calibers.
Makes sense.
So we saw that, you know, the performance on your antelope, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was great with the 308. Fantastic, through and through. But that was a perfect scenario. You were using a Remington core locked, right?
Correct, yeah.
Cup and core bullet. I'll segue into bullet design a little bit. Cup and core bullet, pretty soft, opens up rapidly. Great for that situation on thin-skinned game. Now you take your 308, your Remington core lock bullet, talking elk at 300 yards, big boned, they'll go forever. If that shot had been off a little bit and clipped bone, I don't know that that would have gotten it done.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Does that make sense?
That does. That does.
Or am I just rambling?
No. Based on your description of bullet design, if it does open that quickly, I mean, it's going to fragment much quicker. And that,
yes,
each fragmented piece is going to have less and less energy. So if you hit the shoulder blade of an elk, you know, you're probably not going to get through it.
And that's why I think, and the reason I wanted to do this again is because I got into a discussion with somebody on that 22 arc, and they brought up the point, well, how many animals have you killed with a bow, an arrow? Total different concept.
Oh, yeah. Surface area of a broadhead, three-blade or four-blade. You're using surgical blades. If anyone out there has been cut by their Havilon or their sharp knife, you bleed for a while.
Yes.
So it's a different, there's no sharp elements on a bullet.
Right.
You know.
Well, I mean,
except,
I guess,
fragments, I guess, but that arrow, it does a lot more damage than you think. It's just not a hole that goes through. It's,
yes,
those blades really.
Comparing a 22 arc to a fixed four blade broadhead and bow and arrow.
Slick trick or something.
Yeah. It's a different concept. So I want to put that out there. Back to the good starter rifle for a kid or some of these smaller caliber things. If I come across somebody in the field and they've got the latest, greatest 22 arc and they're hunting with, hey, more power to you. Okay. If it's legal, do your thing. That's great. I would err more on the side of like a 243 for a starter youth rifle.
Yeah.
For that 200 yards and in shot that you're hopefully waiting for.
Yeah.
Same goes if you're talking about like a female hunter, I'd look at something more like a 6.5 Creedmoor or a 308. Very ballistically similar. And yeah, I know if anybody listening wants to nitpick me on that, yeah, you can find some differences, but that's that kind of what I'll call like medium caliber thing that I think is safe. And anybody that shot a 6.5 Creedmoor, holy smokes, my 10-year-old daughter does it and it's fine. There's not too much recoil. If you're stepping up to like, hey, I want to hunt elk, this moose hunt, as we mentioned, the guy used a 300 Win Mag. Great caliber, 300 Win Mag, 7 Mag, something like that. But why try to do it with something so small just because it's out there? If you want to get a new gun, get a new gun.
Yeah.
But if you're hunting moose or hunting elk or even big-bodied mule deer, I would say go with more something in that .284, like a 280 Ackley Improved or a 7 Mag or a 300 Win Mag, something like that. You're buying yourself extra insurance on the shot, causing a lot more damage for sure.
That's my thing. It's just getting the animal on the ground as quick as possible in
yes.
the most ethical way as possible. I mean, I don't know a lot about rifles, which is not pretty easily to understand that. But yeah, 22 arc, it does not to me sound like the ethical way of going about shooting larger game.
I'll use two. I just saw a social media post from somebody much better hunter than I am, started a hunting company. One of these guys that hunts hard and is very successful doing it. However, he was doing like a gear layout for a mountain goat trip, and he was taking a 6 Creedmoor. That was his rifle for the hunt. I looked at that situation too, and it's like, okay, we've all seen videos of a mountain goat getting hit.
Oh, yeah.
And rolling down a hill, or it takes a couple steps, and next thing you know, you've got 3,000 feet to cover down into a valley to recover your... Why not just take something that's going to anchor it? That just high shoulder right shot will just drop them right there. Next, I want to get into bullet design a little bit, and then we'll talk about a bison I killed with a relatively small caliber and the bullet I used and
you were
why
kind of forced to shoot a smaller caliber.
Yes, it was not the original intent of the hunt. We'll get into that next segment on Nevada Backcountry. Hey, final segment of Nevada Backcountry here. Thank you to Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. Man, I got ranting last segment there, Dave, and I didn't
it's
really...
all right. It makes sense.
We have the luxury of having a soapbox where people are forced to listen to what I want to say.
Yeah.
And when
but
you...
it comes with research. I mean, you read up on it and such and made your educated decision on
Henry's opinion.
Henry's opinion.
I think part of it, too, is I married a strong-willed woman, and I've got 4 kids. Nobody else in my life listens to me. So
good point.
I get to crack open a microphone and say what I want to say for once.
Yeah. Now,
so we started going into it a little bit. Couple personal experiences. Your antelope with, it's called a cup and core bullet. So it's basically a copper cup with a lead core.
Yep.
Opens pretty fast, opens pretty violently, not a ton of penetration, but again, on a thin skin animal like an antelope, it's fine.
Yeah.
Does a trick all day long.
Oh, yeah.
I used, this was the story I teased last segment, favorite rifle of all time, 25-06. Great gun, killed plenty of stuff with it. I was on a hunt one time, and the person I was hunting with forgot ammunition for his 375, and
which
we
is
were
a big difference than
a 25-06 versus a
375. It's a bit of a different gun.
So it was a bison hunt, and he had a 375 Ruger and was gonna shoot it. It was actually technically his hunt. Well, we get out there and he's forgotten ammunition. I had my 25-06 with a little pet load I worked up for it. Makes it, it's stupid accurate. So it was like, okay, well, hey, Henry, you got to shoot that. I don't have ammo. I was like, okay, I'll shoot it. Using a Sierra, and no knock against Sierra, they make great bullets, but it was a 117 grain Spire Point boat tail bullet, cup and core, very similar to like those core lock bullets. Guess what? It did the trick. I killed the bison with a 25-06, one shot, but I put it right where it was supposed to go. The bison was broadside and no wind, short shot. It was like 80 or 90 yards. Perfect scenario, lighter than average for that species caliber. It did the trick. What I wish I would have had, had it been a little longer, a little farther away, little windier, would have been something, you know, like a 7 mag, a 300, with the next step up, what I'll call a bonded bullet. So everybody's familiar with like the Nosler Accubond. They now have the Nosler Long Range Accubond or something, a little higher ballistic coefficient bullet. But a bonded bullet is essentially that copper jacket bonded chemically to a lead core. And I think for anybody listening, if it's a mechanical process. Excuse me. I think it's a chemical process they use to bond those two together.
So it opens up later?
Well, it opens up again. You're talking about a pretty early opening to it. However, because that copper jacket doesn't shear away and the bullet kind of, it retains more mass on impact.
Oh, okay. So better kinetic energy or something.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It sticks together a little better, a little better penetration. When you move up from that, you get into, I don't want to call it a hybrid, but like a partition. So you actually have a section, the back section of the bullet, where it's a complete enclosed chunk of lead in the copper jacket. So think of like if you cut a house in half and you've got like the living space and then you've got the attic. Right. There's a ceiling in between those two. Same concept with a partition style bullet.
Oh, okay.
So even if that front, the attic portion in the house reference, even if that front portion opens up super violently and fragments, that rear enclosed portion is going to stay together and penetrate. So,
okay.
If you're listening, jotting down notes, Nosler partition is the most famous one. And that became super popular because of elk hunting in the West. As you know, elk hunting, you know, you're walking through the timber, you're anticipating, hey, I'm going to spot them first and I'm going to get on them and I'm going to have a 300-yard shot at my bull. Oftentimes, you'll walk up on a bedded herd and they're up and you're talking about a 50, 60, 70-yard shot in right. the timber. So what was happening with those old-style cup and core bullets is you hit something hard, hit bone, whatever, it fragments, opens up, doesn't penetrate. So Nosler came up with the partition where you have that enclosed section. So even if you walk up on something at 70 yards and you take the shot, even with a super fast, super powerful caliber like a 300 Win Mag, that bullet's going to stay together, that rear section, and penetrate through the animal.
Punch through.
Yep. Still opens for yeah. those longer 300-400-yard shots.
Right.
Moving up from that, you get into monolithic bullets. If anybody's from California that's listening, you know exactly what I'm talking about because it's all the dingbats in California will let you hunt with, those right. solid copper bullets.
Yeah, that's what we had to use when we went and hunted in California with Pat yep. for his buffalo.
Barnes makes, excuse me if I screw this up, but I think it's like the LRX or something. Hornady makes some.
Yeah, solid copper.
And those can be absolutely devastating. In fact, I use those trip to Africa. That's what they want you to use over there, just to make sure. Bigger, thicker yeah. skinned animals, they want to make sure you get
big,
penetration.
Solid chunk of copper.
Yes, yeah. And it's cool. Even on some of the bigger species over there, you can usually dig them out of the offside if they don't go all the way through. And it's a cool looking, you know, it's got the petals that have opened.
Yeah, it's like a, yeah, like a flower petal. Like,
yeah, super open. Cool. Yeah. But that would be the ultimate as far as penetration goes. There's pros and cons to all of those. I know a lot of guys that are super successful hunting with just those monolithic bullets. However, and here's the caveat to all this, for what we hunt in Nevada, I just don't know that it's a necessity. I don't think that there's anything here that's going to stop like a bonded bullet or even with your experience, like a cup and core style bullet. I got to take a breath after that rant, Dave. Coming full circle and getting back to the push towards smaller calibers. If you are one of these guys hunting or gals hunting with like a 6 Creedmoor, a 6.5 Creedmoor, something like that, just make your bullet selection wisely. You know, don't go with like a cup and core in a 243 right. because you might have issues. Now, if you are a hand loader and your kid's got a 243 and you want to hunt with it, perfect. Just lean more towards something like a Nosler partition or one of these Barnes LRX, a monolithic bullet, right? It's pros and cons to everything. It's like to draw an analogy to the archery world, how many times have we beaten that horse with the mechanical versus fixed blade?
And oh, man. Yeah.
It's the same exact analogy.
Carbon versus aluminum.
Yes.
I mean, geez, yep. there's a reason why there's so many different arrows and broadheads and insert everything to it. It's not for looks. It's actually very much related to performance.
And that's, it's the same exact thing. We've talked before, but I'm shooting a 70-pound bow at a 29 or a 29 and a half inch draw length and a 500 grain arrow. I could shoot a butter knife through two sheets of plywood with that setup.
Oh, yeah.
I can use a mechanical if I want. My wife is shooting like 45-ish pounds at a 26 and a half inch draw.
Fixed blade.
Fixed blade all day.
Yeah.
It's the same exact thing. Your kid's out hunting with a 243. Maybe I'm not going to go with the Sierra Spire Point, the cup and core bullet. Maybe I'm going to use a monolithic or a Nosler partition or something that stacks the deck in my favor.
In that favor, yeah. That makes sense, yeah.
If I'm out there with a 300 Win Mag, cup and core will be fine for everything in Nevada. I just got to pick my shots.
I have my antelope and deer arrows, and then I've got my elk and caribou arrows, and then I have a holy, if I ever get to hunt a moose, which will be next year, just to let everyone
you draw
know.
The tag,
I have a completely different arrow for moose.
Yes.
So, and they all have to do with weight and performance.
That's smart. I've gone just across the board, 500 grain arrow. I got the arrow brand I like, brass insert, slick trick, standard fixed blade. Yeah. That's my setup for everything. It punches through.
I use the slick trick for everything because that thing has just,
it's phenomenal.
Just done some amazing damage on everything I've hit with it. My elk I hit with it. But I easily could, if I wanted to just have one arrow magic for all animals, I could go with what I'm using for my elk, you know, when I hunt elk. Yeah.
Very good call. Yeah. I should probably do something like that, but it's time to wrap up the show. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thanks for listening to my rants about bullets, calibers. If you guys have stuff that you found, you liked, worked really well, send us a text. It's 775-884-9910. And everybody, get out there, fill your tags, and be smart with fire.
Yes. Have a good weekend.